for Mercedes-Benz Berwick. Seize the opportunity on C-Class Edition C models at outstanding driveaway prices. Here's four-time Premiership Hawk, Jordan Lewis.
Lewis from 40, low, hard goal.
Wide Lewis, courageous as always.
Jordy Lewis joins us in the studio, as he does every Thursday, to cast his mind ahead. Before he does, I've just... Shane Jackson has come out of retirement to ride John O'Brien's horse in the big $350,000 race today.
And Shane has.
I've sent the message to him. This is for our listeners, straight from the owner's mouth.
Right.
Geordie, just sorry to eat into a bit of your time for a minute, Geordie, but you could get a couple of tickles on.
No, he's been down to Warrnambool the last couple of days.
All right, okay. Kieran, this is from Brown. Kieran wouldn't have run him today if he didn't think he could win.
So you got the right. I was there on Tuesday,
yeah.
And this same horse ran on Tuesday.
Yes.
It's running again today.
Well, that was my question. Is it too soon to back it up? But Gary's just answered that.
Tough as old boots. Kieran wouldn't have already run him if he didn't think he could win. That was
fair enough.
Straight to the point.
You two should get down there for at least one day of the May races.
Well, maybe next year, if we're still around, we could broadcast from there, Gary.
No, I think SEN Track did some sort of big
thing. They were there yesterday. Campbell Brown was at Essendon Airport to catch a plane on the way down to Warrnambool, then realised that all the rest of the crew were at Moorabbin Airport to catch the plane down to Warrnambool yesterday morning. So he didn't start the day off too well, but they got down there in time.
No wonder he didn't make it across the English Channel. Yeah. He was swimming the wrong way there too, wasn't he?
Oh, you're sharp. You should go out more often, Wisp. Hey, Geordie, big news, Christian Petrarca deal. Seven, are you happy with the deal? Where does he sit in terms of the future leaders of that footy club?
Yeah, I think I've been on record to say I'm not a big fan for long-term deals. I think anywhere between 3 and 4 years would be where I think he's comfortable. But congratulations to he and his management group. I think he's in a really good spot, and I've been fortunate enough to meet him as a 16-year-old, and to see his progression, not only as a footballer, but certainly as a person, and watch him mature. It's been stark the last 2 to 3 years, and it was really off the back of making some changes from going off social media. I think a lot of kids these days love the plaudits that comes with social media, but it's very hard to deal with the stuff that comes from a negative point of view with that also. So he removed himself from that. And then his football then took a turn. It really did. And then once you come back from an off-season of disappointment and to turn yourself into a professional athlete, which we've all gone through those periods, he came back and worked a lot harder. And then his game really benefited from that. But in terms of leadership, the captain of the football club is Max Gawn. Probably the next one that you would think would be Jack Viney to get another shot at the captaincy. But I don't think it's too far out of line to say that Christian could potentially captain this football club.
Would he want to be the captain, do you think?
I think so. I think if you had asked him a year ago or 2 years ago, he certainly would have understood that he wasn't ready. And he's not ready now.
Yeah.
But I think in 2 years down the track, 3 years down the track, and a few more years of maturity and backing up performances, I think he'd be right for the job.
I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear you talking about Petrarca saying, okay, comes into the competition as a superstar talent, you know, from a young kid perspective, you know, one of the best young talents out there. But it takes 4 or 5 years for the penny to drop. You know, like there's an expectation, okay, well, these kids come out of under 18 football, they understand that, okay, this is what's required. But sometimes it takes that time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For somebody to understand, okay, these are all the things I need to put together in place for me to be a professional footballer and to fulfill my potential.
And also he was dealing with an ACL injury in his first year, so he missed a whole year of football. The side at the time wasn't playing that well, so it's always hard to come in and have an impact when the side isn't playing too well. And I think because of his body, we all saw him when he came in. He was quite a mature body type, so we thought he would just adjust straight away. And that just didn't happen. So for whatever reason, it just takes players longer, some shorter. I mean, Matty Rowe came in, made an impact straight away.
Yeah.
Because he was probably a professional from the time that he was 14 or 15.
Sam Walsh the same.
Sam Walsh is the same. He's gone to another level this year. So for whatever reason, it just takes players a bit longer.
So I was interested. Oh, that's fascinating. I'm interested in the social media side of it. So he made that decision, did he? Just said, that's it. No more whatever it is, Twitter, Instagram, whatever.
Yeah, I think as, and even I dealt with this. So when I started my career, that wasn't around. When you started, when you guys were...
we're sending messages by carrier
pigeons. Sending messages by fax.
I beat you.
But so even when you're a mature player in the system, it still affects you.
Yeah.
Because feedback can be quite brutal. So a young kid coming in who's trying to get consistency with his game, there's a lot of speculation and there's a high bar that being a top draft pick you have to perform at. So he just didn't deal with it as well as some other people would because he's a likable guy. He wants to please everyone. So that was really the wrong channels to receive feedback. So when you shut off that, and you listen to the people that you should listen to, you become not only a much better player, but a happier person, I would think.
Some great advice right there from a man who's been there and done it before. This is a great question here for you. Saturday night, who would you rather be ahead of Saturday, Nathan Buckley or David Noble?
Oh, God. I think I'd rather be in the North Melbourne camp, to be honest. I just think... What we saw with them against Geelong, I saw effort. I saw players that looked like they wanted to play for the coach.
Yeah.
And then what we saw against Melbourne, it was a lot of the similar sort of stuff. And the biggest criticism, I suppose, with Collingwood this year is we're not seeing enough of that from the playing group. So if coming up against these two sides on Saturday afternoon, I think I'd rather sit in the North Melbourne camp, to be honest. I mean, this is a great round of footy, and Tim and I were talking before off air about tipping. Now, tipping is hard nearly every week, but this week it is. There's so many games that the team... So you look over the rounds, there's 6 out of 9 games within 4 spots of each other. Now, 5 of those games can either equal on points or go ahead of the opposition. So this is a round where... If you want to move up the ladder and overtake, you know, the sides above you, this is the round to do it.
All coaches talk about this, and that is, oh, yeah, we're only taking it one game at a time. But when you're back in Hawthorn, were you looking at a block of the season?
Yeah, we
always?
Would
always.
Yeah, we would always look 4 weeks.
Right.
So after the 4-week game period, we would say, what were we, 2-2? We would always want to be 2-2. If we were 3-1, well, then we're ahead of the ledger. Another thing that we used to look at was interstate games. They became really important. Usually 50% to 40 to 50% games are interstate. Those games became really important as well.
Confidence is really important too. And you say, okay, well, David Noble and North Melbourne, they are on the improve. All the measurements state that they are on the improve. Time spent in front out there, the fact that players are starting to combine and understand each other's game plan and what David Noble wants them to do. All those things are going upwards, right? Nathan Buckley, on the other hand, they're copping it still as a team. They look like they're lacking a little bit of confidence in each other. They've got new players that have come together. Moore's gone forward. Will he go back this week? That type of thing. How do you think you build that confidence in the short term?
Well, I think for me, when I watch North Melbourne and speaking to David Noble, a lot of their preseason was based around offense. So you get really energized as a player to go out and play, understanding that the coach is giving you the license to take the game on. And then what we're seeing with North Melbourne at the moment is they're starting to develop a defensive side of their game. So there's a clear way in which they want to play. At the moment, what you've got with Collingwood is because they're not playing so well, they haven't got a clear brand of football, but now they're starting to throw players around because that's what you do. You don't know what the right mix is. And it's a credit to Nathan Buckley to be able to do that. But there is not a clear way in the way that they want to play.
Hey, Geordie, Geelong and Richmond is going to be a belter. Friday night, this is a side that's got to find a way. It was great listening to Chris Scott. He said, you know, we've had a few shots, we've landed a few blows, but we've never really, you know, been able to get job done in recent times. The Tigers have won the past 3, 6 of the past 7. You're in a situation at Hawthorn with that great Hawthorn side where you struggled with Geelong, conversely. How did you turn that around eventually? What was it? Was there a pivotal moment in all of this? And what would the Cats be looking at this week?
So this is the game, 5th versus 6th, both on 16 points. Both of these sides, we would imagine, would play finals this year. So how do you get that one over the opposition within the season? And ours was well documented, thanks to Jeffrey Kennett coming out and saying that Geelong were mentally weak and we had the wood over them. Well, the next 12 or 13 games, we actually went down. So that wasn't great. But it was 2013, I think, was the turning point. We played them twice that year and only lost by around a goal or two goals for those games. And then after the second one, I think it was about round 15, Chris Fagan said, enough's enough, effectively. We need to review this game on the Monday, but not only review the performance, let's review our mental state. Why can't we overcome this great Geelong side? And once again, we were going to play them. I think they were sitting first or second. We were sitting first or second. So there was going to be a final that we're going to play this side. So until we addressed it mentally, which funnily enough was after the 13th loss.
How do you do that though?
Well, it's just put everything out on the table and you review the mental side of it. But you also review the really high level detail bits of play in the last quarter. And quite often it would be players trying to win it themselves. And the review was basically came back to, hey, no one needs to do anything special. Yes, it's heightened. Yes, you've got in the back of your mind, we can't beat this side. But in that moment right there, you just need to do the simple things really well. But it wasn't until we addressed it mentally that we got over that hurdle.
Hey, we're going to get to Nath Brown at Sportsbet and come back and we'll explore. Sometimes in amongst all that, and this is when you talk about brutal honesty, you sit down and I want to know whether any of you have had a teammate that's put his hand up and said, listen, I just can't handle this player. You know, like a situation where I'm not saying this is the case, but you keep playing me on Tom Hawkins, I can't handle him. He's got the wood. Is that this brutal, I've been involved with this, that's a brutal honesty where you sit back and go, God, I admire that player who sits up in front of the playing group, his own teammates, and says, you keep playing me on this bloke, he's got my measure. And I'll give you the example on the other side of this. And also we'll talk to Jordan about the call we took this morning from Jenny about media and the criticism of players and coaches and whether it's gone too far. So stay with us.
Kennards Hire is making trade easy with an express load and go service and heaps more. Melbourne, stop tangled hoses forever with Aussie retractable hoses. Supplied and installed for only $169.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Jordan Lewis in the studio with a wisp, only a couple of years out of the game, so really well placed to have a take on one of our callers, Jenny, this morning, who said that it's just too much, the criticism for players and the criticism on coaches is out of control. Paraphrasing here, of course. Why don't we just go down sort of positive street? We'll run people out of the game. You're uniquely placed because you've ended up your great playing career only a couple of years ago and you've got a really impressive media career on the go now. Do you see it any differently now that you're on the other side of the fence? And how did what's your reaction to what Jenny had to say to us earlier today?
I think certainly when I was playing, there was a period where I had to shut off from all media, and it's easy to do. I think when you're involved in this game, you understand that it is it's a win-loss game. People are going to be critical of your performance, whether it be a coach, a player. So I think you understand that. And does some criticism go too far? Yeah, of course it does sometimes. But I think also you can switch off. I listened to Tim on the way in here. I used to listen when I was getting criticised from a performance point of view. I used to listen to Smooth FM. I used to read the Australian newspaper and really escape from the game. But I think players and coaches who are involved in any high-level sport in particular, you understand that that's part of what you do. So that's why teams now have people in the building and psychologists and stuff outside and all this mental health stuff to be able to deal with that part of the game because it is...
Is it a major concern inside football clubs right now?
Do you know what? It's not... I didn't think it was the criticism from commentators. from coaching staff, because you know where it comes from and you know that the people that are giving it to you have been there before. They've been in your shoes. They understand what it's like. For me, I think the hardest thing and the things that we don't see are the stuff on social media from people that you don't know that haven't been there and done it before criticising you. That, I think, is the hardest thing to deal with. Not from commentators, not from ex-players, not from that part of the media. That was the easy part because you knew where it came from.
And simply put, everyone says, well, just shut yourself off from that. It's very hard for an 18, 19, 20-year-old to shut themselves off from social media, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because if you don't hear it, one of your mates has heard it,
yep,
and they expect that you've heard it, so then they bring it to you, yes, and you go, well, I hadn't heard of that, so now thanks for bringing it up. And
did you feel, are you at that point now? How many years have you been out of the game now?
This would be my third.
It's third, okay. Yep. Are you at that point now? When you initially step out of the game, you probably feel like, okay, well, maybe I've got to be a little bit careful about how I criticise or how I critique people because I was there 12 months ago.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you went through that stage, and do you feel like you're through that period of time now?
I'm still not comfortable with it. No, I've really got to be I am more of the positive type of commentator or viewer of the game. There's certainly bits that you need to be critical of, but it still doesn't sit comfortably with me to criticise a player or the way the team's playing. I tend to look at glass half full, but I know that changes over time, yeah.
Tim Watson's here. It's a conversation starter for the all-new Kia Carnival, Australia's first GUV. Got a great audience. They buy in. They love it. Mick says, are you bloody serious, Gary? The game would be boring if you didn't critique the likes of Hill. Just goes to show the media think they're the game. I watch the footy, not listen to the criticism, and that's your prerogative, Mick. You don't have to listen to anything. But, yeah, he's going to get criticised, isn't he? Just as he's going to get praised when he plays well. That's part of what goes around, Mick. If I said boring.
Just as we do.
We get criticised. We do indeed.
You should sit here, Mick. Sit here for half an hour. You want to talk criticism? I'll give you a criticism. Every word that tumbles out of our mouth gets analysed here.
Chelsea have beaten Real Madrid. They'll take on Man City in the Champions League final. So that was old news that they are through. Where do you want to start?
Well, do you want to keep talking about this or not?
Well, Tommy Harley's going to join us as soon as he's available about the whole COVID situation that's unfolding up in Sydney and what it means for the Swans. Yep. He'll give us an insight into they're going to have to travel earlier to come down here and play Melbourne at the MCG on Saturday. The Giants game against Essendon you had a little bit of info on that.
Oh, well, there's a possibility that it might get shifted to Canberra, so we'll find out whether or not that's the case and then the implication. Really, it depends upon how many of these COVID cases, these new COVID cases, pop up in Sydney. So nobody at this stage knows. But the way that the Premier up there was speaking yesterday, there is an expectation that there will be more positive tests.
Well, red alert is how it's been described. Moza from Cobden's got a nice take on this. These people need to stop criticising the criticisers. They've been abusive to us because we've got an opinion that they don't share. I quite like that. Well done, Mozza. Magnificent work.
Many years ago when I was coaching and I was getting heavily criticised, and I just shut down all the outside noise, Gary. So I just, for 12 months, I used to just listen to the FM music station, right? And so I thought that was a safe place to be until one of the blokes back announced the song one day and said, that's just like my Saints and that
wanker
waste of space coach that we've got at the moment. I had to shut everything down. Anyway, can I just throw some football stuff out there? Brown reported on Channel 7 News last night that North Melbourne are having another big swing at Josh Kelly, right? So, and then further to that, he's got a contract, Josh Kelly. I don't know whether you're aware of this or not, but there's a clause in his contract that he can activate, which means that he can stay at his choice at the Giants and continue on this long-term deal, which is about $1 million a year, as it's been reported. Or if he wanted to, then he could move. Now, the background to all this, Gary, is that he hasn't been particularly happy about the way that he's been played. He sees himself primarily as a midfielder. And when I say midfielder, more a in the square, inside, power type player midfielder, as opposed to where they want to play him. and where they believe he is best suited, and that is on the outside. And I'm not saying that he's an outside player, but as a winger, and to use his attributes the best way they believe that they can be used for the benefit of the team. What do you think? Do you think that he has the potential to be more than what he's been at the Giants?
He needs to be. He needs to be more. He needs to play better. If he's $1 million a year player, then you need to be a top three in the best and fairest year in, year out. You need to be a Pendlebury-type consistency and influencer of games. You need to be All-Australian squad every year, All-Australian team every second if you're on that. That's the sort of contract, that's the sort of player that that contract buys or should buy.
Yeah.
So if he's not doing that, but so the extension of that is, well, the Giants have committed to that contract at that price, therefore they'll deploy him where they think they're going to get most value from him. And if they think he's not an inside mid, they think he can get $1 million worth of value from him as a high half forward, well, good luck to him.
Yeah.
Toby Green gives you that sort of value as a high half forward. Not sure Josh Kelly does.
What is it that they haven't discovered about the way that he plays that they're going to discover? Like, well, they've had a good look at Josh, and he's a fine player. Okay, no one's criticising him for his ability. Like, he's got an enormous ability, but you play somebody where you believe their attributes best suit your team. And that's where they believe that his attributes best suit their team.
Particularly when you've committed $1 million a year to him for 8 years.
That's right. That's right. Him on one wing, and then Whitfield played on the other wing at the weekend against Adelaide. I don't reckon you could get two more talented wingers in the one team in the AFL competition at the moment.
Well, you'd think the way the modern game's played, hard running, aerobic freaks, great ball users, then they're perfectly cut for those roles. And wingers have never been more important. You watch, you know, the footy that we do, the winger's role is just incredibly important. So, but that's not to say that Josh doesn't think that. Josh's opinion of where he thinks he should play may be absolutely at odds with where the Giants have lumped or plumped for him to play. And that
is true.
And that's the basis of the problem.
And having spoken to somebody at the Giants, that is the case. That is the case. He believes that he could and should be played somewhere else. And the background to all this is interesting because I think that, you know, maybe an element in all of this negotiation as to whether he stays or he goes or takes another contract somewhere else may be determined by where he is played.
Which therein opens a door for the conspiracy theorists who would say that we've committed to this 2-year plus 8, or what, was it 2 plus 8? 2 plus 8 deal at $1 million. We've watched him play the last couple of years. We think we may have over... I'm just spitballing here, right? This is a conspiracy theory. We think we may have overcommitted... we'll play him where how we think. If he doesn't like it, then he might go, and then we're out of the deal.
Okay. Would he be, if he does move on, and say, I mean, North Melbourne had a real crack at him a couple of years ago, and he decided to stay at the Giants. If he does move on, is that, would you think that going to North Melbourne would be the right place for him?
From what? From his point of view?
Yeah, from his point of view.
For his footy?
Yeah, like he's going to get the money. We know that. He's going to get the bag. All that'll come. But in terms of what he wants to get out of his footy, young, developing team, he's been through all that already at the Giants.
Well, without knowing, I've never spoken to Josh without knowing, no, if you're going to come back, go somewhere where you're going to be involved in a premiership in the next. And he would have those options available to him. He just might have to suck up a hit through the back pocket if that was the case. Like, there's 4 clubs reported. Is that what I read? 4 clubs reported?
4, yeah.
Now, I mean, would you be looking at one of the contending clubs back here in Melbourne?
Yeah.
As opposed to going to a North Melbourne who are going to be, you know, a couple of years away. And I guess that comes down to what he wants to get out of his footy, doesn't it?
That's right. And whether or not they can accommodate him too as well regarding his financial demands.
Well, he's not going to get that money at Geelong, or he's not going to get that money at, you know, Richmond. So then you go, okay, money or success is where he's at.
Okay, well, let's talk about Toby Green and the fact that he has he's committed really lifetime now to the Giants with that contract extension.
Yep.
So he's a Giant for life, Toby Green. He said what you'd expect him to say yesterday when he was asked that question about the captaincy and the fact that he's the fill-in captain at the moment for Steve Keneally. He wasn't going to put pressure on Keneally by saying, yeah, look, I want the captaincy. He may want the captaincy. Maybe he doesn't want the captaincy. Maybe he doesn't want all the other bits and pieces that go with being a captain.
He looks like he's still the leader, though.
Like all
he
the
thrives.
Thing, he is going to be all of that anyway, because that's what he is. And you and I have spoken about this many times. He is so popular up there at the Giants. They love him. The players love Toby Green up there. And so that's not going to change whether he's the captain or not.
No.
And he's going to play the way that he plays, whether he's the captain or not.
But all those great leaders would do that anyway, wouldn't they? This is their whole argument. We talk about this a lot, you know. Would Pendlebury play any differently if they'd handed it over to Taylor Adams or Darcy Moore?
I don't think so, no.
No. Well, would it be better for Darcy Moore or for Taylor Adams if they had a bit more of that responsibility?
I don't know. You'd have to be at the club to understand.
Yeah. So my point is...
Those players.
The Canelio one would be, I think, up to Stephen in the end. And they may make the call for Stephen by the end of the year anyway. But he may just turn around and say, look, I thought it was me. I thought this was what I really desperately wanted to do, but it hasn't worked out. And I can see that it's going to be better to have Toby or someone else. So that'd be, I'm really
That's been done before.
Of course it has.
Sam Mitchell, go back to the Hawthorn example.
Sam Mitchell. Yeah, no, that's
made
right.
captain, and then
I'm not sure Sam made that decision, by the way.
But he accepted Gary. It didn't affect the way he played post that.
No, that's right. The club did, and he was a premiership captain, and Luke Hodge was a multiple premiership captain. So it's no great slight on you. But when you're in the job, you'd think, oh, no, I am the best man, and no one can do it as well as me.
It's kind of a schoolboy thing, though, isn't it? Like if you go back to your school, everyone wanted to be captain. I've never known any player that didn't want to be captain.
No. Hey, can I ask you about Sam McClure? Is he on the footy classified every week? Is he filling in for Archie?
Anyway. I don't know. We don't watch it. It's on too late for us.
He was on last night. He had said some interesting things to say about the Collingwood footy department and an alternate ticket that's been put together. Eddie sat there next to him, Eddie Maguire. Let's have a listen to Sam McClure.
My understanding it is there is going to be major changes to their football department in the next 1 to 2 weeks. Now, I can't go into the specifics of that yet. There have obviously been major changes before and recently at Collingwood, with Graham Wright coming from Hawthorn into the Magpies, I would expect more changes soon.
Right, now, and Eddie's sitting right next to him while he's saying that.
Yeah. I'm not so interested in what Sam's got to say. I'm interested in what Eddie had to say. As I am told, someone that may have watched it might be able to help us out. No comment from Ed on the back of it?
No comment.
Is that what happened?
No comment, no.
Yeah, so that's interesting, isn't it? That's interesting. It's an interesting
You were saying
dynamic.
A lot without saying anything.
No, it's an interesting dynamic when you've got the man that's run that club for 21 years sitting right there next to him, and Sam McClure says there's going to be major changes to the footy department in the next fortnight, and then surely Eddie'd have a comment if he's at arm's length, but he didn't know what was going on.
And what are the chances of him not knowing what's going on there at Collingwood at the moment?
I don't know, but I would think he would know what's going on.
I think we can safely say that he knows what's going on, and I think we can safely say that somewhere in the background, I think that he would be, and we've spoken about Jeff Brown before, I think he would be a backer of Jeff Brown taking over as the president of the Collingwood Football Club. I don't think he wants it to develop into a war there.
Well, now we're getting
a major disruption at Collingwood.
He did say that Mark Corder had been appointed, therefore the dust should settle. We don't want a blue. McClure said there was an alternate ticket being put together with Jeff Brown. So let's have a listen to this.
There was news broken by Damien Barrett on the Monday edition of Footy Classified about Jeff Brown potentially challenging at the end of the year. My understanding is there is growing support for that. There is change still wanted at the Collingwood Football Club, and as we speak, there is an alternate ticket being put together with Jeff Brown as president, and there is still the threat of an EGM looming on the Collingwood Footy Club.
Still the threat of an EGM. That's an extraordinary meeting. So that would have to be called... I think you've got to have like 15% or 10%. It depends on the actual club, but that can happen at any time, yeah.
That is what I'd like to hear Eddie on.
Comment on that?
Did Ed come... Because Eddie said when Mark Corder was appointed, and I'm paraphrasing, but look, it's good. He's appointed. Let's get behind him. We want stability. My legacy has been no EGMs at the Collingwood Footy Club. So when McClure says that, I'd be really interested in what Ed had to say on the back of that.
Yeah.
Because if he would, if he was to say what he said 3 weeks earlier, it was, hey, no, Jeff, no, we want stability. We don't want an AGM.
Well, clearly though, and you know as well as I do how these things work, clearly Eddie doesn't want to get into the middle of this conversation.
Well, that's fair,
okay?
That's
because
fair
he's the outgoing president. So he doesn't want to have his fingerprints over this, and he doesn't want to be making public statements about it. And I respect that, okay?
Yeah.
But we know well enough to know that behind the scenes, he'll be trying to engineer who he believes is the best person to take Collingwood forward.
Yeah, it's an interesting
do we
situation.
Or not? Do you agree with me on that or not? That Eddie will be behind the scenes trying to engineer the best person to take Collingwood forward.
Well, I'm taking him in what he said when Mark Hawtin was appointed. That the best thing is the stability, and we don't want an EGM at the Collingwood Footy Club. What are you turning away from me? I'm told as soon as Sam stopped talking, Eddie threw to the next story on Petrarca's new deal. Well, let's just watch. We'll watch with great interest. I don't know whether an EGM is what is in the best interest of Collingwood, is it?
Well, it's a democratic thing.
Of course it is.
You get the opportunity for members to cast their vote and decide who they want to lead the club. I think it's a great thing for clubs to be able to do that from time to time. In fact, that's what should happen all the time.
He's got that old school sort of toughness in him, but then he's also a very, emotionally intelligent, empathetic. Once you get him one-on-one, he's there for you no matter what. I'm amazed with how many coaches, their one job is to get the best out of their players, each individual player, however that might be. Even if they might not like them as a player or as a person even, it's like, who cares? It's your job to, get wins on the board, make your team feel amazing and, unbreakable, and it gives you confidence, which not many of my coaches in the past.
Wow. Bit of a whack there from Jack Watts about his previous coaches.
Some special
and the way that he's been handled.
Yeah, no, that's pointed. That's pointed.
It is. It's extremely pointed.
I'd like to go to the coaches and ask him about Jack.
Yeah, but that might be the case. But Jack is saying that there was a way that he could have been handled which may have produced the best of Jack, which wasn't.
No, 100%.
I didn't know whether you're being
I agree with
sarcastic or you're being serious.
No, I'd like them go back to those coaches and say, Jack's saying this, that maybe he needed to be coached differently to get the best out of them. And I wonder what the coaches would say in return in response to that.
Ultimately, that is their job, isn't it, to get the best out of the player. But having said that, your job also is to find the best way to play that player that suits your team as well. And the two things may not necessarily always align.
No, and it's up to a point as well. You'll say, listen, I'll do all I can to make you the best player you can be. I'll go out of my way. I'll mollycoddle you if that's what needs be, or I'll give you the cook that I think you might need. But at the end of the day, I'm only going to go so far because I'm not coaching just you.
Yeah.
I'm coaching 44. Well, really, a senior coach coaches probably 28, doesn't he?
And he's one of those interesting players, Jack, that you watch him and you think, okay, he always looked like he had more to give. And he could have
laconic.
That's right. And he could have participated more, but that was him. He probably thought, that's me. I can give you my best, but don't keep saying to me all these negative things about, you're gonna be more competitive. All these other things that he thought probably that's not gonna end up with me contributing my best football. I can do all these things. I can do them as well as anybody out there on the field, but I'm not going to be that bloke necessarily that maybe you want me to be that competes in the way that you want me to compete.
So then this is why I would love to talk to their coaches, his coaches, all of them, and say, well, do you think Jack Watts got the best out of himself as a footballer? Do you think he maximised his ability with that attitude?
Mm. That's right. And I'm sure that they would have reasons as to why they didn't think that happened in the time that they were coaching him.
Yeah. No,
also in this, and this is what I think happens too, is that you get a player at a certain time of their career and they may not have the maturity that's required to understand the messaging that is being delivered. They go somewhere else later in their life. They've had different life experiences. They've been around other players. They mature because of age. And then they see things differently.
Yeah. And you can... We speak about this all the time, the old sliding doors moment where you can arrive at a club that is, and all clubs have been through this over the journey, where it's not strong, where the leadership's not strong, where the standards aren't being driven really hard, and you can get into some bad habits really early in your career. And Melbourne wasn't a great strong club when Jack got there. and had their issues along the way as well. Now, maybe that had an impact in terms of what he thought AFL standard was.
I think that's a really good point. And the time that he got there and the upheaval with coaching and staff and the club, and that all contributes to the uncertainty for a young player.